Hi, I'm Dragan and you're listening to the Lunch Break Coach podcast. In this episode, we're going to speak about men, money and mental health and how money affects the mental health of men. I'm joined by Luca Caruana and Luca is a coach. He's a money coach and he's going to share his experience. Enjoy it.
I would like to start by asking Luca to introduce himself, who he is and how he ended up in the field of money coaching.
Yes, thank you, Dragan. Good morning, everyone. So yes, my story is quite interesting, Dragan. So, and I always like to start it from a personal perspective. You know, when I was young, I was 10 years old, I used to see my father working long, hard hours and but not managing to save money. So we always lived paycheck to paycheck. And when you're young and you know, I used to see my parents talking in harsh tone about money, you don't tend to have the courage or the bravery to ask questions about money. And that's why we see money as a taboo. Mm-hmm. And then years later, when I was 18, I saw my father, he lost his job. He was the main breadwinner of the family. And we did experience hardship, you know. He did not have any emergency fund. He did not save anything. So my parents had to sell the most precious objects just to keep the family getting by until he found another job, etc. And I said, look, I don't want this to happen to my family. So I started learning about personal finances 15 years ago. And then I realized that I can also implement what I learned to others as well. Back when I graduated in finance and investing in 2017, it wasn't that clear. Mm-hmm. But now with the rise of technology and you know, new courses like the money coaching certification I took last year, I said, why not introduce the concept in Malta too, with the vision of even growing it further in Europe as a whole. And I'm happy to say that this year I started slowly, gradually, but the concept has grown a lot, especially with people aged 25 years to 50 years old. So mm-hmm. I think that indicates lots of things as well.
I'm hearing quite often that I'm going to say the younger generation has a different relationships with money.
Yeah,
compared to, you know, people who are more mature probably are coming from, you know, different times of development of the society. And that's what also hearing from businesses, that actually their main problems are coming with younger people who cannot really manage their finances better. And we're going to look into this in a second, but I wanted to actually start with the topic about men and mental health first, because this is something that I explored through the years, and the more I work in mental health, and the more I work even in leadership and development, I see that men still struggle to take care of their mental health. And when we're talking about money are a significant stressor in men's life. It's interesting, I was trying to find some research, and there wasn't much, but I found some related to the US, and where they found 65% of women feel anxious about their personal finance compared to 54% of men. But then men deal with this differently, and we look into this in a second. When we're talking about financial problems, this can lead to a lot of challenges, a lot of challenges, which, you know, can bring stress, anxiety, even depression, and can also lead to substance use, engaging in risky behavior. And once you start having these experiences, that is going to impact all aspects of your life, including work, relationships with the people, and even how you look after yourself. Because what happens is that when men need to look after, they take care of other people in the family, and they're like, you know, they assume the burden of bringing money to the family, for example, they are afraid and they find it selfish to spend money on themselves. And we end up with finding many excuses why I'm not going to actually look after myself, because I have to look after someone else. And that becomes very worrying because we are actually neglecting our health by trying to help someone else. And as we know that in order to help, we need to befit ourselves to do this. It doesn't work any other way. I mean, this is a basic rule of rescue, if you have to put it like that. It's that kind of stress can affect also hormones, sleep, concentration, and even how we make decision. So every time when we need to do something, if we go to the money perspective, that will affect our decisions, even if we have money. And from what I know from mental health, even if the problem is resolved, that kind of thinking can continue even in the future. So any dealing with money will bring stress to the person. Luca, I was wondering, what's your experience with money and mental health? Have you seen anything like that with your clients?
Yeah, so it's interesting to know that many thought in the beginning that when I started this money coaching aspect in Malta, many think that money coaching relates only to the practical part of money coaching. So money management, learning how to save, learning how to invest, etc., you know. And that was quite popular. But in reality, money coaching is not just that. It's also concerning the psychological aspect. And when it comes to the psychological aspect, we go into the money habits part, the money mindset, you know, how a person developed his money personality, the characteristics he inherited from his parents, and how they developed him into the person that he is today. And as I was telling you before, Dragan, the interesting factor is that when you take when I take a statistic of all the clients I've had this year, and they've had around 40, most of them were women, not men. And that indicates, and it also comes out clear during the sessions, that women are more open to speaking about their issues than men are. And in fact, the men who actually attended the sessions, mostly they wanted the practical part of money, so the money management part, the investing education, the savings, you know. But some found it difficult to open up about their experiences. And in reality, they have to be considered as well, these experiences, because if when you were young and your father was very careful with money and almost a miser, for example, what can happen is that you maybe you will not inherit that characteristic, but you will go to the other extreme. So you spend more money just to make up for the lost time you think you've experienced during your childhood.
Okay.
And that can develop into another challenge for yourself. You know, so we call it the fool personality. You know how to make money, but you spend it all. And you don't have money to save at the end of the month. And that's why I like to start from the psychological aspect. So helping a person first, see what his challenges are from a psychological point of view. So identify your characteristics, then work on how you can enhance your personality, and then go on to the practical part of money. Why? Because like that, you have a good base to tackle the practical aspect. And men found it, yes, more difficult to speak about their challenges. And I think it comes from ego as well, you know?
It's very similar to what we see even in mental health. And sometimes even in coaching, women are more open to, you know, explore more. Men want a quick fix sometimes. And you really need to make this possible for them to understand that, okay, it doesn't going to be fixed quickly, because if it's been there as a behavior, like, you know, your relationship with the money, with anything in your life, you won't be able to fix it just by touching something on the surface, you know, starting saving money. But even in mental health, we see it like men are more reluctant to to look for help, and said, okay, ego, what else do you think stops men from looking for help?
Well, for sure, it's money shame as well. You know, I tend to call, and I emphasize a lot on this, that there's a section in society, I call them the silent sufferers. So, so they are people, they can be both men and women, but men in particular, they earn a decent income or even a very high salary. They are very successful in their careers, or they have a good thriving business. And they have a money problem, so they don't manage their money well, and they end up in debt. They end up spending everything on luxury cars, on boats, etc. And you know, this lifestyle creep, then they are ashamed of talking about their experiences. Why they are ashamed? Because of what society might think about them. Because if you are in the eyes of society a successful business person or a successful professional, and you speak about problems related to money, many would be afraid that society will laugh at you. And they say, listen, you have problems. What about the minimum wage earners? How are you speaking about your problems? But really and truly, these issues, these challenges, is most of the time not the person's fault. It's because of the lack of financial literacy that has built up. You know, if at a young age you have had no idea about personal finances, how can we expect you to, you know, to know everything and to know how to manage your finances, how to know about your money personality, etc. And but you know, society doesn't see it that way, and that is where I think this has to change. It's like what mental health was in the past. You know, there was this taboo.
It was very difficult to change. But
and money is one of the last taboos now. Talking about money.
When you were talking now, I remember there was a study with lotto winners, people who won the lottery, and that many of them actually have lost the money because they didn't know what to do, and that brought other problems. I was wondering, like, if I have to give advice to people that manage other people, how do you think we can spot a colleague or a friend that is having financial difficulties? What would be the signs that if I'm a manager, for example, like I can spot one of my teammates that they're struggling with money?
Yes, it is very difficult to spot because, as I said, they don't tend to talk a lot about it. But now I am even noticing it with the rise of, you know, cost of living, etc. People, they don't just, you know, tend to speak about this rise and that they're not managing to get by. But it can also be connected to also issues that they're having in their private life as well, in their relationship with their children or with their wife, etc. Why? Because as a manager, maybe I would think that it's just a marital problem, or it's just a relationship problem he has with his first connections, you know, with the man's first connections. But in reality, it can come from money as well. In fact, a recent survey carried out by PwC, it showed that money was the main cause of stress in persons' lives. And really and truly, if you lack money in your life, or if you lack, you know, the way to manage money, it will affect everything. It will affect your ability to buy the necessities for your families, you know, to provide for your family. It will you will lack the ability to enjoy life as well, because okay, they say money is not everything, and I agree with that, but today without money, how many things you can do, you know. And many HR managers are now realizing that financial well-being is something which needs to be tackled. And in the UK, there are already companies based on financial well-being. It spread so much there. And in Malta, gradually, I'm seeing an improvement as well in this kind of well-being as well.
In reality, every good employee assistance program should offer financial coaching as well, because, you know, that's part of the can be a big part of the issue. And there's also something else, even if we're talking about people experiencing mental health problems. So let's say the main issue is mental health problem, it's not money, that can impact their income, because there's a strong relationship between mental health, poor mental health, and being, you know, on the low financial end. So that lack of income and lack of prospect in life. I was listening to you, and we started talking about work, and I was reflecting on my experience in the past couple of years working with some managers, and I can see that, you know, financial struggles, or them being the single contributor to the family and the commitments and the fear that they might lose the money, it's impacting even how they lead people. And I'm also talking about, you know, how they push people so they don't fail financially, or strive to get bonuses. So this awareness, like I am working and I'm pushing people so I can, you know, we build good financial year, then we have bonuses, the bonuses for everyone, but they don't lose their own bonus. And I recently, I'm at the moment actually working with one who is needs to change some things. We said, I don't want to have a poor mark, you know, and the company, I don't want to have poor appraisal, so I don't lose my bonus. So, and then people make also poor career choices based only on money, or, and when I mean poor, they can jump into a job that is very damaging for them, only because the income is going to be big. But at the same time, they suffer and they say, I suffer because I don't spend more time with my family. And they don't realize, okay, if money is your main motivator, how this can start damaging your well-being and the well-being of your family. And what do we need to do? Work more and earn more money, or actually manage our money a little bit better?
Yeah.
And I also see difference in cultures.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I've worked with some people in Asia who, you know, are well paid, but they know that they're way well paid. They arrange their life around this well paid job, so they can, so in order to be top performers, they work 12 hours sometimes, yeah. 13 hours. And when you tell them, I ask the question sometimes, okay, if something happened with you, who's going to look after your family? And a very shocking question that came once was, I made not enough money.
Yeah.
To exactly. My family to be, I secured my family. And I was like, okay, that's not really, I mean, okay. Yeah. And we don't judge because it's a different culture. Do you see this as coach with the cultures in your work?
It's cultures, yes, I agree. And it's also based on the personality type as well. So when it comes to cultures, yes, I noticed that, for example, in Malta, the culture, you know, the clients that I've had mostly would prefer the practical part of money coaching. So, as I said, the money management part, the savings part, monetizing your talents part, you know, the practical part.
Mm-hmm.
But then other cultures, you know, I've had even some clients from the UK who really want to learn more about the psychology of money, about money habits, money mindset, you know, because they respect the fact that it's not just the practical aspect that can help you grow. It's also the psychological aspect, the building of new habits, which can impact not just your financial life, but also your whole life. And then what you also mentioned about people waiting for their bonus, or even wanting it, you know, just to get by. And an interesting factor is that employees don't realize that an increase in salary or a bonus won't change their situation by much. In mm-hmm. fact, I've had a particular client, and he was a man. His salary increased from 35K to 55K in 1 year because who was underpaid for the job that he was doing. And when he came to me, he told me, when I was earning 35K, I felt I was in a much better position than I am now. And the reason was that this bump in salary, which came very quickly, it led him to do some, you know, to make some choices, which in the past he wouldn't even have dreamt of. So sometimes, if the increase is staggered, it would have worked in his favor, I think. But now that he has this salary, he ended up depending on credit card debt the last few days of the month. So not only he didn't save, but he had the credit card debt now. Because, you know, it's an increase of 20K and you enter into a period of instant gratification. Now I can buy that mobile phone, which I have always wanted to buy. I can change my iPad every year. I'm just inventing, you know, some examples. But yeah, it's quite an issue there. So when I do these kind of financial well-being workshops, they serve as a reminder to employees and to every person attending them that, listen, an increase in salary is not the only answer, but managing your money better.
So what you do with the money you have.
Yeah. So look, a person earning 25K a year can be better off than a person earning 60K a year.
So that's a very interesting thing. And I can see it even in my life, you know, like the different incomes and I was happier with certain things, you know. And I realize, so like, that's money brings some things. They're important, but how we spend the money is also very, very important. And because we already started touching on this, but okay, what would be your three easy and first steps, let's say the three first steps you would recommend someone, doesn't matter, let's say a man comes to you with this issue, to start doing to manage their financial situation better than where they are? What are the first three steps someone needs to start doing?
Yes, this is interesting because by coincidence, last week I was attending a podcast and they asked the same question. And it's, you know, first thing is to actually sit down and to take a good look at your personal finances. So even a simple Excel sheet would do. What are your incomings and what are your outgoings? Nowadays, there are good financial apps which you can use to track our expenditure very easily, you know. Apps like, for example, I'm mentioning it because I use it every day, like Revolut, for example. I do my daily expenditure with it, and it immediately marks if I go to a supermarket, it knows that it's grocery.
Yes, I
go to
I
a pharmacy. And that helps, you know. You can sit down and you do everything manually, but when you have an app like Revolut or any other similar app which works the same way, it makes your life easier. So that then, you know, at the end of the month, where your money has gone. And I tend to do it by month because by week it's a little bit more, you know, difficult and more tedious to do every week. So let's say you sit down once a month and you go through what you spent money on and what was your income in that particular month. And from there, the statistics will tell you, listen, I overspent here, for example, or I didn't realize that I was spending this much on restaurants, etc.
I'm looking at my app at the moment and it looks like I'm spending all my money on coffee.
Yeah, that's incredible. And from there, and this then brings me to the second step, which is if the person does not have it, start building the emergency fund.
I always hear about this.
Yeah.
How it looks like.
It is, I call it the most underestimated fund that exists, you know, because people tell you, if I have 10K, 20K, whatever, why should I leave them just sitting in the bank or nowadays now with a very, very small interest rather than investing it into something which can give me more return? In truth, this fund is very important because if something happens to you, if another, God forbid, COVID comes along, or you lose your job, or you have a health issue, it will allow you, you know, some time to pay for the things that may happen. If you lose your job, maybe you need 2 to 3 months to find a new job, or even if you find one from in a day, maybe it's not the job that you want to work in. But a good emergency fund will give you the benefit, you know, of time to make a better choice. And many people ask me, but how much money should I put in this fund? And I would say the most basic answer is, listen, at least 3 to 6 months worth of salaries. whatever you're earning.
Okay? I remember this. I've heard somewhere this, and actually, that's how I've been working with even myself. Six months to be covered on the minimum income.
Yeah, that's the most basic advice that they give. Mm-hmm. But for every person, it's different.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and that's why money coaching on an individual basis is important. Then, because for a single person still living with his mother, you know, with his parents, etc., maybe 3 to 6 months can be enough. But for a father who has, you know, young children and more responsibility, whatever, maybe 6 months is not enough. But maybe he would feel more comfortable with a year and a half, 2 years, some people, you know. It's important that this fund can be accessed very easily as well. So if you need money quickly, you can access it immediately, I would venture to add. Nowadays, we are lucky in inverted commas that there are some products out there where they give you at least some percentage on the money you're putting in that fund. So recently, so they are giving between 2 to 4% on your flexible on flexible accounts as well. So we are lucky in that because 3-4 years ago, they gave nothing in percentage-wise. And yes, you have to leave it completely flexible because you don't know when you're going to need it.
It's
and
true.
You start saving for that immediately if you don't have it. So I would venture to add, give it more importance than paying your car loan or whatever. Why? Because if you pay more on your car loan and you don't have an emergency fund, and if something happens, you know, a health issue comes along, what are you going to do? Are you going to the bank and tell him, listen, I gave you extra money for the car. Can you give them back to me? You know?
That makes a lot of sense. So if you have a loan, like, you know, and you have to pay other things, see what your priorities are.
Yeah. And so emergency fund is very important, at least to make a balance. You know, if you really want to get rid of your loan, and you have 200 euro extra per month, put like 150 on the emergency fund and 50 euro on the loan, for example. It's just an example. And then after that, you can start looking at ways how to save and eventually, yes, invest for the long run.
So what you're saying is the first thing is take a stock of what's going on. Take a good stock of where the money are draining. Like, okay, spending where you spend, which are your priorities. And I did it recently and I realized that, you know, I spend money to entertain the family and other money to drinks and then money to stay on site. And I'm not talking about when I'm talking about my business, but I'm just talking about, you know, money for the family. The second thing is have discussion that the emergency fund, which you need to start building gradually because you can't just take money immediately if you want to cover more. And after this is settled or kind of in progress, then look where you can start increasing your income with, I don't know, passive or whatever, like we call it, something that will work in your favor with your money. So invest in something. Yeah. That's great. One big question is, especially like for men, I mean, if you have any experience about this, okay, we're starting building this, the behavior is changing, but what we need to do to remain consistent? Because as you know, people start smoking, they see the benefits, and at one point something happens and they grab the pack of cigarettes again.
Yeah.
And in order to change this, you need to have some structure in place. So what do you recommend someone to do if they find themselves in trouble again? And to keep the habit.
Mm-hmm. Yes, of course. So I am a big believer in automation. Nowadays, it's very easy to automate whatever you want to do with your personal finances. And apps like Revolut or whatever app of similar caliber to Revolut, you can actually automate your saving, automate your investing. So if you want to save 100 euro per month in a particular vault where you're building your emergency fund, the moment your salary comes in, you give an instruction to Revolut or to your bank, whatever. Listen, standing order 100 euro every month immediately goes to the emergency fund. And you don't do it manually. Why? Not because doing it manually is wrong. There's nothing wrong about doing it manually, but we are all busy people. And it's very easy to forget. It happens even to me recently. I was doing, you know, the investing per month, monthly, doing it manually, you know, buying it directly myself. And I forgot about it and I skipped a month.
Okay.
I had a very busy month. And now it's now I'm the person who teaches about money. And it happened to me, let alone to people who you know, personal finance is important, but thinking that you have to buy that investment every month or thinking about how to put money in the emergency fund, etc. But when you have these automation tools, which are quite available now and therefore free, make use of them and keep a structure every month. I emphasize a lot on monthly allocations and even how I divide the budget is month by month. Even when I'm safe, you know, if you have your insurance, your car insurance, next December, not this coming December, but December 2024, start saving for it from January. So if it costs 1,200, put an automation 100 euro per month towards that, that fee. Because then you will find it much easier, you know? And so automation is the key.
And like that, you're not going to be tempted to overwrite, or you will know exactly at one point when the automation starts, you know exactly what you have after the finding. So that's quite a I think. And I, as a coach, I can say, you know, even like if you need to meet your money coach twice a year, or your coach or someone who is accountable, find even accountable partner, I guess. Like if you know, like your partner at home, if you have any, someone who can vouch.
If you are in a relationship and you do it together with your wife, for example, that would be ideal. But if not, just go through it with a person you trust or with a money coach, for example. I mean, that's the whole idea of this profession as well.
Okay. Thank you, Luca. This has been very interesting. And thank I know we've touched only on the surface. But there's a clear relationship. What I noticed today is, okay, men are reluctant to look for help in any case.
Yeah.
No, it doesn't mean for money. And money and mental health both come with pride. And they don't want to be seen as a weakness. And from experience, and the more I work and the more I talk to other professionals, I see that men are changing as well. So like there is a change. Men are more open to talk about their problems. And the same thing should happen with money. I mean, everyone can experience this, and doesn't matter how successful you are. And I also assume that people that have enough money also have their worries about money. So it's not only those, because the assumption is, okay, like you don't have money and that plays a huge risk. It does. But even if you have a lot of money, that's not risk-free.
Exactly.
You base your life around what you have. And then you need to, you know, you need to go through a lot of changes through this. And maintaining it, it's even more difficult.
When
you have a lot. So
because creating money is easy for some persons, you know. But then when they come to maintaining their success, it can get challenging. And as I said in the beginning, this all comes down to the lack of financial literacy. Not just in Malta, but all around the world.
We need to increase our knowledge
about
everything.
Thank you, Luca, for joining us today. I hope you found something interesting in our discussion. If you would like to know more about Luca, I'm going to put the link to his website in the podcast description.